Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
By the way, I was just looking at Facebook, and some woman was asking me, what do you mean? I know what you're saying. I'm not condoning selling drugs, ma'am. But I know that if you have no money, you have a chance to make money, that you're going to do that. And selling drugs is an economic endeavor. In terms of the moral depravity of it, that doesn't always apply when you have no money. That's all I'm going to say. But I'm not condoning it. Let's move on here. Our next guest, Peter Cove. We talk about all the millions of Americans that are on public assistance and are not in the workforce and might be trapped by the welfare system. The author of the book, Poor No More, joins us, Peter Cove. And hello, Peter.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
I'm glad to have you on the show. And we just had a very compelling first hour with a couple of local leaders of color. And we talked about a variety of things. But on that point I was just making, I guess you're in the business or trying to promote the idea of having incentives for people to earn money in more legitimate ways, in productive, socially redeeming ways, as opposed to simply doing it on the dark side because that's where the cash is.
Well, that's absolutely right. I don't take the position that because you don't have any money that makes crime more reasonable.
No, I don't either, by the way, Peter. You and I agree on that. I'm just saying people will do where people go where the fish are, period, in many cases.
Well, absolutely. But let me tell you, the fish are with jobs. This work. And what my book is about, my book is called Poor No More, and it comes from my being working over 50 years with poverty programs in the United States. And coming to the realization that they hadn't worked. And it was very upsetting to me. I look back when I started in 1965, and you should know that I left the University of Wisconsin as a graduate student to go work with the poverty program in 1965 because I believed I had to get involved in something that was doing something.
That was right in the beginning.
And I really believed in it. This is when Lyndon Johnson passed, and we all believed that
the
we
war
were
on poverty
in a decade. And I looked back after 50 years as I was writing this book, and I realized in 65 when I left Wisconsin and came to New York to run a program that the poverty rate was about 15.5%, and that as I was writing the book, it was about 15.1%. Get it, Mitch, over $22 trillion, not billion, trillion dollars,
yeah.
To solve the problem. We hadn't moved the needle in it. It was like a mea culpa moment to me. I realized I had been involved in it. I'd run and evaluated and designed programs, and they hadn't worked, and I had to figure out what would work.
Well, obviously, then, the government programs or even the government community service jobs or whatever the case didn't stop people from trying to make more money doing something bad. So the jobs that would pay money that we see with the greater black middle class and so forth didn't reach enough hands, Peter.
Well, also the programs that were designed really didn't get people working. They were all these social service and the kinds of things I think a lot of people in Madison, Wisconsin would think are wonderful.
Job training.
But I have to tell you, they don't get people working. And I've dealt with over a million people that we've placed in my company, America Works. Poor people. We do it in Milwaukee. We do it all over the country. They want to work. And the government is in the way. It doesn't allow the people to get to work. They disincentivize them. They don't put the incentives in. And I just believe that's wrong.
Well, I agree totally. I mean, you and I are in total agreement on the waste of the trillions the government has spent in trying to attack this problem. You know, even Robert Kennedy... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Robert Kennedy would decry the poverty programs. He would say, we train these people for jobs. There are no jobs there in these areas, whether it's the hollows of eastern Kentucky or the Mississippi Delta or the ghetto. You train somebody, there are no jobs are there.
That was one of the big problems with all of it. They were doing a lot of training for nothing that was there. In my book, I propose three steps to change the equation. One, that we should get rid of all welfare, except, and people in Wisconsin don't, and Madison don't yell yet, all, except for people who basically cannot work because of physical or mental problems. There would be a safety net for those people. Second, get rid of all welfare, programs and poverty programs, because they don't work. As I said, we spent over $22 trillion and it hadn't changed the equation. Take all that money and create jobs in the private sector, and if there's not enough in the public sector for the people you were just talking about in the hollows down the south, and say to somebody who comes to the government for money, should it be a woman who just had a child? No, but we have daycare and we have a job for you. Somehow, on the left in this country, jobs has become a four-letter word. Work is very important, and people really want to work. I believe, and I said I've dealt with millions of poor people. They want to work. Let's get them work.
I agree totally. But so, in other words, you seem to be suggesting that if you can engage in a world with subsidies and various programs of social safety net categorization, whether it's housing or subsidies, that you may think, why would I want to go and get some job for $9 an hour as a cashier? What's the point? Is that part of your deal?
Well, here's something that most people don't understand, that when you go to work, you don't lose all of your benefits. You can stay, depending on how much you're making, you can still get housing benefits. You get earned income tax credit, which the government is sending you back money at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. You can get food stamps. You can get all kinds of benefits, even though you're still working. So it isn't as though I'm going to go to work and I'll lose everything.
That's true. So it's the, well, of course, you couldn't be. If you're making 15 grand at Walmart as a cashier, you couldn't really be self-sufficient, Peter. So you're going to need those public assistance.
And those are there. My suggestion is that people get money from the savings that I'm suggesting of getting rid of most welfare and poverty programs, and that we pay them enough so that they can live.
Well, yes, but we're not going to pay the cashier at Walmart enough to live. So, in other words, if you were empowered...
But again, the cashier at Walmart is still eligible for food stamps.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Eligible. You're not suggesting we should remove those subsidies.
Yes. I think we should remove those subsidies if we are paying the people enough money, and I believe that...
Oh, when you say we, you're talking about Walmart? I mean, Walmart is...
No. The government paying enough money for the people who are working in the jobs that are being created, both in the private and public sector.
Okay, now let's stick with the $15 an hour, let's stick with the $10 an hour at Walmart. That person may work 40 hours a week or more and not make enough to afford daycare for two kids or health insurance.
In my book, I suggest a revision to the earned income tax credit. So that I don't know if people understand what.
No,
that
I understand
means,
what you're saying. So give them more
cash. Yeah, but if you don't
have
enough money, you get money back from the government.
Right. Okay.
So it would be a subsidy to those.
Kind of a Milton Friedman offshoot with his minimum income allowance, right?
I mean, yes, kind of. I don't agree with the minimum income, but it is.
Well, he would have used that in place of endless welfare bureaucracies. He would have eliminated, you know, a lot of the welfare bureaucracy and caseworkers and government lines and government offices by simply giving...
I just don't believe in paying people for not working. I think people should be paid for working. You should make work.
Oh, I see. So working at a small wage and getting a subsidy is better than simply
not
having not working. Well, I guess the point was he would have given them enough to take the edge off, but if you wanted to have a life, you would still have to work. It wouldn't be enough money.
The government should not be paying people to stay home.
Right.
It should be making sure that people can work and will work and be making enough money so that they can support themselves. That's the government's responsibility. And in my book, I want to trade a check going to someone for not working for a check going to someone who is working.
Okay, so if you would increase the earned income tax credit, then you have somebody with enough cash to live and be self-sufficient even with the $10 an hour job.
That's exactly right.
Okay, I got you. We'll come back. Peter Cove, Poverty No More, and your calls as well. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
Mitch Hank for Atterbury, Cameron, Haig.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin's super lawyer multiple times, Eric Haig.
Hi, can I get you to use the handset instead of speakerphone, please?
All the way to a jury trial.
What we do that's different from some firms is, when necessary, we take the case to trial. It's the ability to do that and a track record of doing that that gives you the leverage to get a fair settlement for the vast majority of your clients. There are lawyers out there who actually will not take them to trial. And it doesn't take the insurance industry, of course, very long to figure that out. So their leverage is minimal when trying to negotiate a settlement on the case, whereas the lawyers at Atterbury, Cameron, Haig have all demonstrated an ability to take cases to trial. It's that track record that provides the leverage to get a fair settlement so that we don't have to take the cases to trial.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Haig and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
The all-new Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
Let our family help your family.
This is Pete Gunderson. Pre-planning a life celebration doesn't necessarily mean prepaying. At Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, we offer a variety of affordable options that you can pre-arrange for free. It's pre-planning without the worry of prepaying. Learn more at GundersonFH.com, your hometown life celebration center.
Gunderson Funeral Home.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Talking to Peter Cove, I tell you, it's going back to 1965. It's amazing. The War on Poverty, LBJ, Joseph Califano, Sergeant Shriver, the old suspects. Poverty. And I like your concept here. I mean, because the earned income tax credit was fashioned by Reagan and Bill Clinton. I mean, certainly my ex-wife would enjoy that in the spring. Two small kids. But point of it is, why not? What's been holding it up?
What's been holding up what?
Having a situation where we encourage people to take jobs because they would be better off with an expanded earned income tax credit rather than calculate. They might as well stay home and enjoy all the assistance programs instead.
Well,
what's been holding up it up, and I have this in my book, is something I call the welfare industrial complex.
Right.
As well as political.
Well, that's what Friedman wanted to, Milton Friedman wanted to get rid of that, is why he would rather have the other, which you don't support, the minimum allowance.
Yeah, well, that's a good way of thinking of how to get rid of government, but it's not a good way of thinking of how to get people working.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a libertarian view
but
of government.
But it wouldn't be enough money to live on, Peter, as you well know. I mean, he wasn't stupid.
I don't want to set up a new welfare program
all
for
right,
everybody.
Fine. Well, you'd be replacing.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, in answer to your question, there is what I call a welfare industrial complex in this country.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's complex. It's made up of organizations that get paid to run programs that aren't necessarily effective. It's run by government employees who believe we're being too hard on people who are poor. But let me give you an example. About 15 years ago, I had a woman who was on the state legislature in New York. She was head of welfare, and she came to see my program at America Works where we did welfare to work. And I said to her, what do you think of it? And she said, I think it's the best program I've ever seen. I said, are you going to support it? She said, no. And I said, why? She said, well, there's a program down the street from me in Brooklyn, and it's near my campaign office, and it's not as big as yours, and it's not as good as yours, Peter. But on election day, they bring out the vote. This was a liberal woman who had gone into government to do good stuff, but was more than willing to sell out poor people to get reelected. Let me tell you, Mitch, that goes on more than you know.
Oh, well, of course. I mean, I've worked in government. I know how that works big time.
Right. And so if you want to know why things don't change that much, that's one example of why it doesn't change that much. People aren't in government necessarily interested in the best for the people they're serving. They're interested much more in self-preservation.
Well, it sounds, though, in a way, that the underpinning of your argument, which I agree with, is tied in some ways to attempts at health care reform, because the CBO and advocates of the current system of Obamacare will say, hey, you're going to take $23 million off of health insurance, even though they might have premiums that are too high and deductibles that are too high, even though they have, quote, a insurance card. But they can't really go to the doctor because, you know.
Right.
You know, but yet it's couched in those terms, Peter. So getting people to, say, afford private sector insurance rather than be guaranteed coverage is a tough sell.
I don't think what I'm suggesting is a tough sell at all. And I'll tell you why.
Well, that is not what you're saying.
Well, I think everybody that's listening to this program is probably working, or most of them are working, or believe that people should be working. Yet when it comes to poor people, and when the government says people who are on food stamps should go to work if they're able-bodied because they're receiving something for the government, which
right.
is something President Clinton suggested.
What's wrong with that? Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that, except it's been fought by the left all over this country. How dare them tell people who are on food stamps they've got to go to work? Well, they're receiving something from the government, and if they're able-bodied, and if there's a job there, what the heck is wrong with that? We had the Obama administration come into New York and tell us we could not place people who want food stamps into jobs, even though they wanted to.
Well, that's insane.
What is wrong with
that? It's insane. I mean, that's pathetically
right.
stupid. Now, I think drug testing.
That's what goes on, and I'll bet you many of the people in your community would agree with it.
Well, the Republicans in this state made it where you have to apply for four jobs a week, and that caused some tension. But again, it's tension.
That's a game. That's what unemployment offices have been doing forever, and it's only a game.
Yeah, because you know what's that mean, right? I mean, it could be a token attempt. I made a phone call.
Exactly.
I don't know how that goes.
That's exactly right. I mean, people say, oh, yes, I went here and I went there
well,
and I went that
but
other
Peter,
place.
I got to tell you, I mean, in terms of entrepreneurs, they don't encourage you to get investors and start a business. Because when I started this, I was spending all my time calling people and getting investors and getting advertisers. And so I didn't have time to work at Menards. So, you know, I had a severance, but I could have used maybe one unemployment check out of 3 months. I could have used one. So I applied. Right. I applied, and they said, well, can you work 32 hours a week? And I said, well, I work more than that now doing what I'm doing. Yeah, but you got to work 32 hours a week. And I said, well, I don't have time for that. Okay, thanks. I mean, let's face it. If you want to start a business, you don't have time for, you can't do what they tell you. They can't do what you're telling me to do. I wouldn't have been able
That's exactly right. And anyway, the government is a very poor deliverer of getting people to go to work. It's the private sector that does that. And they should be encouraging the private sector, and that's what I suggest in my book.
Yes, and you're right about all that. But I think what's happening is when you work, though, and you're making, you know, terrible money, you ask yourself if it's worth it. So I guess the ultimate goal is we have to try to empower people with upward mobility or the opportunity at upward mobility so they can rise and shine, right?
Well, also, you say, is it worth it? And, you know, that's one calculation, which is an economic calculation. But in 1983, Pope John II wrote an encyclical. I'm Jewish, so you got to know where I'm off the reservation here. But I was reading his encyclical, which talked about work and the power of work and the importance of work. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, if you deny a man work, you deny them part of their spirituality. Well, I think we have to be very careful about it, because we need to be creating the opportunities for people to work and make work pay.
I totally agree. I guess, of course, is it your belief, and I'm guessing it is, that if you take that starter job or that low-paying, low-skill job, that you will, through the value of work, enhance your skills and rise in the economic ladder because of what you gain from that job? I mean, is that part of your belief?
You pose that question to every person who's listening to you right now, and they will say yes, because they did it.
Well, that's true. I mean, how often does somebody stay at the Walmart cashier job for 20 years? I mean, I don't know.
Right. My daughter asked me the other day, what was the first job you had? And I had to think back, and it turned out I was delivering newspapers when I was 7 years old. And the day Babe Ruth died, this is 1953, I was delivering newspapers, so you can calculate my age. And I saw Babe dies, and I looked at it, and I didn't, Baby dies? It's a headline in the newspaper. Well, I didn't understand it. But I started at 7. I'm sure a lot of
Peter, you're talking to the ultimate geek, and I have to say he died in 1948. I apologize, but, you know, that's okay. You can look it up. I mean, it's a minor point, but yeah.
You're absolutely right. You're right. I was actually 7 years old. You're absolutely right. It was 48. You're right. Thank you.
Well, and I hate myself, but I can't help it. I mean, it's just I go.
No. I'm glad you said that, because I needed to be checked.
Well, you didn't need to be checked. I just can't help myself. It's why I couldn't play Trivial Pursuit with my wife. She hated that. Anyway,
I'm glad
she wanted me to clean the car.
And I just looked it up the other day, actually.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's beside the point. But no, I think you're. I don't know why this is so hard. I mean, Reagan liked the earned income tax credit. Clinton liked it. To a lesser extent, Milton Friedman was sort of for that in a different way. But
yeah.
The point of it is, why can't we do it?
I'll tell you why. Saul Bellow had something. He said something wonderful. He said, a great deal of intelligence can be invested in ignorance when the need for illusion is deep. And the need for illusion here is political, polemical, and it has to do with ideology. And it has basically to do, I hate to say it, but with ideology on where I came from, the left. And they have been, the left has been involved with the creation and design of poverty programs throughout the United States, because the Republicans and the right left it to them, because these weren't their voters.
No,
and
right.
And it
yeah.
has been their desire to keep these things going.
And frankly, I became post-partisan in part for that reason, too. I was a Gary Hart delegate. Well, the reason I was him, because he was for at least capitalism and entrepreneurs. The term yuppie was invented during the Hart campaign versus Mondale. But
right.
I know what you're saying. I made that evolution myself. I never kind of joined the right because, of you know, it's kind of hard when you grow up baptized a Democrat. But I've definitely moved away from the orthodoxy like you have and embrace work. And I tell you, Bill Clinton, for all we say about him, kind of had that modus operandi. I mean, he was for that kind of reform in the party.
Absolutely. He absolutely was. He understood it. He understood reciprocal responsibility, that if you got something from government, you give it back. We had Paul Ryan come to our office in Milwaukee about 7 months ago, and Paul just said to me, I'm going to try to put work requirements into many of the welfare programs because people are receiving benefits. They have a right and responsibility to give back to the United States. And I really agree with that. If they're physically able and there's a job there, they should be doing that. And anybody that's listening, that's paying taxes and that's working and thinks the other person shouldn't have to do that, I have a problem with that.
I know what happens, Peter. They want to go after Jamie Dimon. They want to go after the hedge fund cheaters and the casino bankers who made out with the bailout. But, you know, they always want to make it about that. So they're ignoring what your point is about attacking.
There's nothing wrong with going after that, but that it kind of takes you away from this issue, which to me is very important.
It's a different issue. They go, well, they want to drug test Jamie Dimon. So fine, go ahead, drug test Jamie Dimon. I don't care. Go ahead. Peter Cove, Poor No More, available anywhere, right? Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon.com. They can get Poor No More. And I want to just tell your listeners that it is more of a memoir. It may sound like just a policy geek, but it comes from my experience. I'm not an academic. I left the University of Wisconsin because I didn't want to be an academic. I've been working with poverty programs on the ground for 50 years. I think they'd enjoy the book.
You missed that nice little townhouse on the leafy streets of Madison to get away from academia.
Well, I was unlike Madonna. I liked it. I was right on the lake.
Well, and that's a good place for you to come visit. But thank you so much, Peter.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
Stay real, Peter. Stay real. Only in the East can you stay real, so it's fine.
Well, I'm trying.
Just come to Midwestern visits in a short notice. Thank you so much. We'll talk to somebody who really had a scare with a zillion cops outside his house. We'll tell you why coming up. And then also the latest Trump update. We got to get our fix on that. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com. Six AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6 AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6 AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6 AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6 AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6 AM Marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
At P3 Pro, we're invested in creating a dynamic video experience for our clients. Everything from planning, shooting, and editing your events, commercials, webcasts, or films. P3 Pro has 27 years of industry standard experience working to make your vision a reality. We stand apart from your traditional run-of-the-mill production experience and create memorable, moving, breathtaking imagery that conveys your message in a powerful way. We take your vision and turn it into a work of art. The art of storytelling, the art of beautifully crafted imagery, the art of persuasion. Visit us on the web at p3pro.xyz or call 608-571-3776. That's 608-571-3776.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
The great Joe DiMaggio still holds the major league record for the longest hitting streak in 56 games. Bucks Takeout Pizza has a 56-year winning streak for the best thin crust pizza in the city. Bucks Pizza has a unique taste like no other. handmade pizzas with homemade sauce and homemade sausage. Two Madison locations on University Avenue and Cottage Grove Road. Just go to BucksPizzaMadison.com. BucksPizzaMadison.com.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Looking for something to do for your girl's bachelorette party? Trust me, we can take care of that for you. Come to Comedy on State. It's so easy. You can go to MadisonComedy.com. You can purchase your tickets right from the website. You don't even have to talk to anybody over the phone if you're a weird person. Let's be honest, you're probably a weirdo. You're listening to Mitch.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to MadisonComedyClub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State. MadisonComedy.com or 256-0099.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
We are back, and an old friend of mine, Todd Gores, who now is in Racine, was the center of action, you might say, in a major way. I think of that old movie, Desperate Hours, Humphrey Bogart, where these criminals went to the family's house and held them hostage. But it wasn't quite like that, but close to it. Hello, Todd.
Hi, good afternoon, Mitch. Happy Memorial Day.
Happy, well, the day after,
weekend.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, weekend. Sure.
But you know what? You had an amazing thing happen outside your house. Tell us what went down.
Well, I actually was visiting my mother, who lives in Racine, spending Memorial Day with her, along with my wife and my son. And we were just having a regular afternoon get-together with a cookout, the usual things. And funny part is, I decided I needed a nap. So I decided to lay down and take a nap.
Uh-huh.
And I get poked by my mother. And she says, "You need to get up. There's someone at the house who's fallen." And I was kind of groggy, and I said, "What?" So I came out to our kitchen, and where my wife and my mother were. My son, I didn't know at the time, wasn't in the same room with us either, so he didn't know what was going on. So they tell me that this guy had fallen down with a bike accident. Well, it seemed legitimate. He had some small cuts on him in a couple different places. Was bleeding slightly, nothing terribly profuse. And my wife and mother had let him in the back door. We had basically our back door open because we were grilling out. And so we started offering this gentleman some water and some, "Would you like some steak and some of the food with us?" He thought, "Wow, that's really nice. Thank you." I said, "Well, what happened?" He said, "Well, I fell down. I had a bike accident." He said, "Bike? Motorcycle?" "Well, motorcycle." I said, "Oh, you're okay. You need anything? Do you need some ice?" And he says, all right, an ice pack, I guess." And then I said, "Let me look at your hand." I said, "Yeah, you might need a couple stitches. Would you like me to call the rescue squad for you?" And he says, no, I'm just going to call my mother." So he had asked my wife to dial it for him because his hand was kind of injured. He was a little shook up. And so she dialed this number of his supposed mother. And a real young voice answered, not knowing, I didn't hear it. My wife heard it and later recalled it sounded like kind of a young person. So we're kind of doubting whether it's his mother. So he called back another time and then another time. And so after about 10 minutes of him being on the phone and just kind of hanging around in the back of our house in the kitchen, you can't see the front yard. You can't see the street from that location of our house. So we recalled earlier hearing some sirens, not thinking about it because sirens come down this street in Racine, Erie Street, which is kind of a major thoroughfare. A lot of cars speed.
Sure.
We're used to hearing cars, you know, driving fast. And so after a little while, I started getting kind of a strange feeling like, well, I wonder when this person's going to come pick him up, and I wonder where this cycle is. So I walk out front down the driveway of my mother's yard. I look down south, one house down from us are several policemen with their guns drawn. And I thought, something's not right here. I said, "Are you looking for someone?" to the officer. He said, "Yes." I said, "Well, we have a gentleman in our house that's bleeding." And they immediately came towards us running with guns drawn. Now, I'm thinking, okay, my wife and son and mother are still in the house with this guy. But the odd part, Mitch, is he was a very nice, polite young man.
Yes.
And so nothing necessarily seemed awry, and based on his injuries, I could see how you might tumble a little bit and
sure,
get some scrapes like he had.
No.
Nothing seemed out of place. So we're giving him the royal treatment like he's one of the family.
Yeah. How many other pieces of chicken?
I'm sorry, Mitch.
Have another piece of chicken. Have another burger. You relax.
Yeah, I even offered him a beer. I said, maybe you want a beer instead.
Why not? Yeah.
And he kind of laughed. He said, well, thank you. You people are really nice. And we said, well, thank you. I mean, you're kind of shook up, and you know, you had a rough day. And so then, anyhow, I decided to take a look, and I mentioned how I said I went down there, and the cops start running towards us. They're on the radios. We have them located. He's in the house. They start, I don't know if I should go back in, try to get my wife and son and mother out, or what I should do. So I'm in basically standing in between with a police officer about 20 feet from me with his gun. Basically, I'm in the middle of him in the doorway.
So the gun's pointed at you, Todd, at this point? Or?
Basically covering me. They're basically kind of covering me, and it wasn't clear right away if they wanted me to go back in or not.
What did they tell you to do?
Basically, nobody said anything right away, and they're kind of yelling to each other, and they're saying, he's in the house, bring him here, blah, blah, blah. And so I just went in the house. I don't even hardly recall doing this. They mentioned I did it. I went in the house. I said, you need to come out now to this gentleman.
Right.
I said, I think you need to come outside now. And then my wife apparently said, oh, my gosh, the cops are all around here. He then came right back into the house, never really left, and started crawling towards one of our bedrooms. And earlier, see, right before I went outside, he told me he needed to use the restroom.
Right.
Well, I think he was looking for a place to
hide. I'm sorry. I'm afraid the cops let you go back in.
I'm surprised, too, Mitch. I was kind of confused because I didn't know if they wanted me to try to make it a way to get them out since we had sort of befriended him.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was
maybe
the
that's
thinking
it. Yeah.
process.
Right. So what happened? I mean, so did they come storming in the house?
So, yeah. So then I get out the back door. Once I said to him, you need to come out, I went back outside because the cop was waiting for me to get out of the house. And then he said, you need to get out of here now. You need to vacate the house. And then they said, who else is in there? And I said, three other people along with this guy, my wife, my son, my mother. And he said, are they're still in there? I said, yes. And then apparently a officer contacted my wife and said, do you know this person? She said, no. He said, you need to vacate now. So my wife grabbed my mother and pushed her out the door. She's 86 years old. So, you know, it took a little effort to get her moving. They got her out the front door. I, meanwhile, had gone out the back door. So now we're separated. I don't know if they're out. They don't know if I'm out. And so now I'm about a house down with another officer. And I basically saw this. And, of course, here's two canine units at the rear door, barking like crazy. They're screaming at him to show his hands, come out back up to us. Office is going on. And I'm telling you, Mitch, there were literally at least 10 officers, rifles at every corner, every window, anywhere you could look.
So the guy come out or what? You know, how did it end?
So they got him out. They got him out, and they finally got out, and they cuffed him, took him away, and then I had walked to the front of the other gentleman's house, a house down, and could see my wife and my son. I knew they were okay.
Yeah.
And that's when my wife and son and mother saw I was okay. So basically, this guy had been part of, the officer told me, I said, well, he told me it was a bicycle accident, bike accident. He said, no, this was an armed robbery. I don't recall if it was a stolen vehicle. They rolled the car up, and that's what was on the news last night. They actually rolled the car, flipped it, hit a tree, basically sheared off the tree because we saw the tree later, and ended up within feet of somebody's living room about one block from my mother's house. Then the driver and the other passenger fled the scene. The driver made it through the backyards to our house and saw the first house that looked like an opening, knocked on our door very calmly, said, hey, could I come in and make a phone call?
Hey, you were, I can't think of the actor in that movie with Humphrey Bogart, but that was the same kind of deal. Yeah. So what is the lesson? Now, don't be nice to strangers. Don't let strangers in your house.
You know, Mitch, I take two takes from this because we were very nice to this man. And that kindness we showed maybe softened his heart to not do anything.
Maybe.
Yeah. And the other lesson we learned with the police officers basically yelling at us, don't ever let anybody in your house. You know, I was napping. My son was in the john.
Oh, yeah.
So the two men that might have kept this from a different scenario weren't available when he walked in the door.
Well,
he might
yes.
have had a different thought.
You could have been shot in the head, frankly, I hate to say. But
correct, Mitch, correct.
Well, listen, Todd, it was a great story. I've got to go, but Todd Gores, we thank you very much, and I'm glad you're all alive. And
everybody's good, Mitch. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, well, I'm glad you enjoyed the holiday that way, so thank you very much, and you survived.
All right, Mitch, thank you very much. Sure. Have a great night.
Yeah. Check out that movie. They made a remake of it, Desperate Hours. You know, there's people in your house, man, and they end up, well, ten the canine, 10 cops with guns drawn outside your house. That's That'll get your attention. Okay, Trump. Where are we with Trump? With the 24/7 impeach Trump tomorrow media coverage. I treat you as, you know, when do you want Trump gone? I tell my aunts, I tell my sister, when do you want President Pence to swear in? The Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com. Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rail.
When I started Revere Trails out in Windsor, I asked for Kim's advice. I'm absolutely amazed at how much he knows about the development of real estate and the marketing part than other realtors.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rail of Coldwell Banker Success, 698-7653.
He's got a phenomenal knowledge of the product and what it takes to get the product to market.
Tim Rail, 698-7653.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show. Good research will make you wiser and more successful. If you operate a business, create a product, or provide a service, what don't you know that your customers know? There are multiple answers to that question that will help you realize greater success. Troy Research is a consumer opinion market research company that finds answers to important questions. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research, 271-8884, or email jlittle@troyresearch.com.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York, especially in the Al Smith projects. It was a no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo is a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hank Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to The Mitch Hank Show.
All right, let's go to the Trump sweepstakes now while we can. Our phone number to call, you'll weigh in on that. 608-210-1667. 210-1667. I'll turn the computer down. I had CNN Politics on there, and of course a commercial blares at me. Mike Dupke resigns. He's the communication director. He's been there for like 3 months. He's out already. There's speculation that President Trump may bring back Corey Lewandowski, his former campaign manager who was fired, to make room for Paul Manafort, who was fired, to make room for Kellyanne Conway, who ran the campaign and has not been on much lately because she did a series of gaffes and a lot of people in the media are boycotting her. But Lewandowski was with Trump for a year and a half when he made his ascent through the Republican primaries and took out all those opponents. So Trump may remember that. He was also kind of a tough guy. I remember he was accused of roughing up a female reporter at one point, and that kind of went away. So, I see him on CNN. He just, one time he said, "Please don't touch me. Please don't touch me," to a different person on the panel. An anti-Trump female just sort of nudged his elbow by accident. Please don't touch me, said this Lewandowski guy who, by the way, Roger Stone, the guy we've had on the show, friend of Trump, he hates Corey Lewandowski. So if you watch the documentary on Netflix, Get Me Roger Stone, you have Roger on the phone saying, we got to get rid of the prick. Well, that's Corey Lewandowski.
Nice.
So if Corey comes back, Roger will be out of favor. It is kind of fun to watch. It's like an episode of House of Cards with Kevin Spacey. House of Cards, which season 5 premieres today, by the way. I may, in fact, be up all night. Who knows? Which, you know, be tough before the school day. So Trump may bring in a war room of people to try to beat back some of these stories. But when we talk about criminal activity, we're talking about Jared Kushner may have tried to set up a private, allegedly wanted to set up a private chain of communication off the books, so to speak, with the Russians. And it was a back channel of communications. They're thinking, why does Jared want to do this? This was not Bobby Kennedy during the missile crisis, yada, yada. This is Jared in December, right after the campaign, where these allegations of Russian meddling. And Jared and his people, well, they were talking about Syria. They were talking about certain things. Why would Jared trust the U.S. intelligence people? I mean, you know, everything is leaked. Oh, you're going to say he's going to trust the Russians? Well, how could it be any worse? I mean, Jared, oh, yeah, let me go through the official channels. Well, no, I mean, I don't know. But here's Dershowitz, though. We'll get to it in a minute here, Mike. Alan Dershowitz, Harvard Law aficionado, who's on the O.J. Simpson defense team, is saying, where's the crime? If Jared talked to the Russians, where's the crime? If they're talking about certain things, Dershowitz is basically saying, unless you can prove that Jared or the other campaign types helped with the hack. If the Russians did hack the DNC emails and John Podesta's emails, which of course was leaked, not hacked, but Podesta had as his password the word password on a phishing expedition. But in terms of DNC emails, The 17 intelligence agencies U.S. say it was the Russians. Well, Dershowitz's point is, unless you can prove the Trump people participated in the hack, presuming the Russians did it, then you've got no crime. And Dershowitz is a certain person who, whatever Hillary Clinton, he's not a Trump supporter politically, but he is a lawyer who said the following about this.
I'm here not as a supporter of Donald Trump. I voted for Hillary Clinton very proudly. I'm here as a supporter of civil liberties and construing statutes narrowly as they were written. I just don't see a crime here. I see perhaps some political wrongdoing. I see leaking information on both sides. But even if, for example, the campaign coordinated, which there's no evidence of, but coordinated its activities with Russia, and even if Russia and the campaign said, gee, wouldn't it be better if Trump were elected, that's political wrongdoing, but it's just not a crime. Nobody can point me to a statute that would be violated, and a prosecutor is only allowed to look for evidence of a federal crime. And the reason I think Trump may benefit from this is this will be a secret proceeding. Mueller is a very honorable guy, so he's not going to leak anything. And in the end, he's going to find no crime. Maybe he'll issue a report, which in my view would be improper because he only hears half the evidence, only the prosecutor's part of the evidence. But he will say there's no crime. Maybe the worst case scenario for the Trump administration is maybe Flynn gets indicted for lying. President probably pardons him at that point. But it's 2 years from now or a year and a half from now. And in the meantime, he has a reprieve. If they had appointed an independent investigatory commission, the whole story would come out, and then it would depend on whether it's inculpatory or exculpatory. The public would know. But now it's going to be done in secret behind closed doors, and all we get in the end is no indictment or a lower-level former official gets indicted. And I think in the end that helps the Trump administration, not hurts them.
That's Dershowitz saying, where is the crime? So he's saying that even if Jared did a back channel with the Russians, it's not a crime. He's doing what RFK did. He's doing what Henry Kissinger did. Now, you can say they did it for loftier reasons, but they did it, right? Nobody talked about Henry Kissinger being indicted. The only person that Dershowitz says is going to be indicted is Mike Flynn. And I'm wondering about Mike Pence because Flynn's people say that on January 6th, they disclosed the money that Flynn made from the Turks, which is like $500,000 from August of 16 to November of 16, which is incredible. And Flynn's people, according to leaks, told the transition team that. But, of course, Pence said on TV that he just found out about it like 2 weeks later. So I'm curious about that. And, of course, Flynn does pose problems. But where's the crime so far? Well, I don't know, Mitch. The investigation's early. Well, it is, but they've also been investigating since July. Where is the crime? There may be a crime. Did Trump commit obstruction on the Comey thing? Well, Comey testified May 3rd when asked under oath, were you ever told to stop an investigation? And Comey testified, not in my experience. Now, the memo came out later saying Trump said, hey, I just hope this goes away. Okay.
Hope so.
Hope springs eternal, right? Yeah. Because then Andy McCabe, deputy FBI director, said the investigation never ended, never stopped. So you don't have the smoking gun yet that you had with Nixon. You just don't have it. You may find it. If you can find that Jared talked to this Russian banker, this sanctioned U.S. Russian bank that he met with, and was saying, well, you know, we'll get you some money if you can do X. Yeah. If they could prove a quid pro quo with the Russians, I'm trying to think, what would that be? That'd be corruption, right? I mean, that'd be abuse of power. I don't know. You know, you'd get them on something, but I'm not sure what the crime is even on that. But, yeah, I mean, Robert Mueller is there to investigate a crime. He's doing a criminal probe. This is a criminal inquiry, the special counsel. And where is the crime? According to Dershowitz, we don't have a crime yet. I wish somebody would call and tell me what the crime is right now. I'm not saying there won't be later, but what's the crime right now? 210-1667. This is the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
New Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary.
You're listening to The Mitch Hanks Show. Once again, here's the voice of uncommon sense, Mitch Hanks.
I want to thank you for listening on MadisonTalks.com, also watching on Facebook Live. You know, MadisonTalks.com is a website, not hard to find. In 2017, going to a website is not
just like Facebook.
Akin to, yeah, it's like Facebook.
Facebook's a website.
Not like bringing the Apollo 13 crew home alive, you know, or doing a major surgery. Like I told Mike Brockenfeld, my engineer, you know what, you're going to have to perform an aneurysm surgery on Thursday. Can you swing it? And that might be asking a lot.
I'll research.
I mean, yeah. Maybe you might engineer the broadcast instead. I don't know, but I mean, it's not that hard. You know, that's part of the deal. We're working on some things. We've gone two nights a week live because we're retooling in terms of some marketing and the rest. But we want to keep our toes in the water while that happens. And I just want to remind you that you can do your own podcast on MadisonTalks.com. If you check out the website, MadisonTalks.com, you will find a Madison Talks podcast page along with a live button and a Mitch podcast button. But on the Madison Talks podcast button, there's all these other people who have done podcasts and posted them on our website, including Governor Thompson and Kaleem Kerr and Alex G and a parenting expert from Colorado with Jonathan Little. It was fantastic. Just a variety of things, and we can rotate those. But, you know, you can have a podcast too, and you, when you record, of course, you're live. So people can hear you in Europe or Africa or Australia, wherever you might want to be, or have calls. And we have three lines so they can call in. And, you know, you can have it there forever. We're also doing our video business here now called Story of Your Life. So if grandpa or your parents want to do a video, talk about their lives, we'll shoot it, edit it with photos and the rest and whatever video you might have and put it together in this magical DVD. And you can have it for your grandkids or kids when Thanksgiving rolls around and pop it in. We might send it by way of other means, too, but DVD will be part of it. We can send you an MP4, right, Mike, or something?
Flash drive, right.
But the point of it is that's all on the table as well as we try to reach out to the community, and we thank you for calling in. We want to thank Bob Keller of Keller Real Estate Group and his sons. They provide the space here for us on West Washington Avenue. So check out the Keller properties, all kinds of great properties downtown, Tuscan Place, Washington Court, various apartment sizes and so forth. Check for leasing questions, senior homes, senior housing on the far west side in Orchard Ridge. Go to kellerapartments.com. That's kellerapartments.com. We thank Mark Brockeveld, his studio engineer tonight, and also Bob Abella and the wide world of radio. I had a senior moment. Goes back to classic radio from the 30s and 40s. The biggest names, Bing Crosby, Al Jolson, Sinatra, Burns and Allen, Jack Benny. Coming up on The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.